Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas! Happy holiday seasons, greetings, and all the rest.
Yeah.
You are listening to this. It's dropping on the 25th of December, yes. Christmas Day. So I know everybody's up listening to this.
Have we had one drop yet on Christmas Day before?
Don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Close to, but I don't think on Christmas Day. This is your Christmas present, listening to us yabber.
That's not a good Christmas present.
What did you get us? What did you all get us? I hope you're with the ones you love, or at least the ones you can tolerate.
Yes.
Yes. Hopefully you got some really cool stuff for Christmas morning here and whatnot. And if you don't like it, hopefully you can exchange it for something you do
or
like.
Give it to me.
Or just give it to us. You're getting the tie and socks and underwear that don't fit.
Yeah, there you go.
And food. Lots of food. 'Tis the season. We were chatting beforehand about cranberry sauce.
Oh, yes.
I'll eat that stuff on everything. So, I will eat it with a spoon.
And you say you've had it made, homemade.
We home make it every year.
I never have. My mom, it was just one of the, she's doing busy, 7 kids in the family. So it was tradition.
You figure one of those kids would have learned how to make cranberry sauce.
Anyways, she always did the canned cranberries on Christmas and Thanksgiving and so on.
Yeah. No, we always homemade.
I need to make it one day. I need to, we were talking about this earlier. I need to learn how to make it.
It's not that hard. Tracy's grandmother used to make it every year. And as she got older, we decided, well, let's take some of the burden off of her at Christmas time. And Tracy said, you know what? We'll make the cranberry sauce this year. Give us your special recipe.
What is your special recipe?
Because, you know, she always had special recipes for different things. Yeah. And she looks Tracy square in the eyes and goes, it's on the back of the package. There was, and Tracy's giving her this look like, are you actually kidding me right now? The special cranberry sauce is the one on the back of the Ocean Spray package. We've been making it ever since. So simple. Cranberries, water, sugar, stir, boil. They all pop. You stir it up, let it cool, stick it in a jar, stick it in the fridge till turkey time.
It's like, I don't know if it was my mother-in-law, but somebody in the family, they make really good chocolate chip cookies, and it's like, that's really good. And, you know, a lot of people are protective of the recipes.
Yes.
And it turns out one of the best recipes you can make for chocolate chip cookies is on the back of the bag of chocolate chips.
Right. I was shopping, and we found a picture frame, and it had a chocolate chip recipe in it, which isn't probably real.
Yeah.
So we tried it anyway one day. They're good cookies. It is actually a real chocolate chip
recipe.
Was it
a handwritten recipe?
No. It was inside a picture, right?
Yeah.
Instead of getting a photo frame
with a random
photo,
family.
Yeah. I get the frame came with a recipe for chocolate chip cookies. And it's still sitting upstairs on our thing. It's not hung up or anything. Yeah. It's just sitting there. But
the recipe's on the back of a bag. It's like, it's no mystery, but it's like, oh, I never thought of that.
Right? We got this box on our counter. We put recycle stuff in there instead of going out with every little thing. And then we go out and throw it into our blue box already and then put that box back on. And that's probably been there for 2 years. About 5 days ago.
What was in the box? Well, the box was
peaches.
For what? It was a peaches.
Peaches.
Box.
Yeah, there was like a couple dozen peaches in there.
Yeah.
And then, so I just happened to flip the box over. There's a big peach pie, world's famous peach pie recipe or something on the bag. And I sent it to my wife, and then she's like,
I didn't know
that was there. So now, apparently.
We've never looked at the bottom.
We've never looked at the bottom. There's recipes are being hidden around the world in various spots. Be aware of your surroundings. Yeah. There may be a really good recipe there for cookies or cakes or sweet things.
But you imagine the guy who designed or planned out the box of that's going to hold the peaches from the peach farm, and he's like, plan the graphics. It's like you do at your work. Plan the graphics. And he goes, hey, usually they're white on the bottom, and this put a recipe on the bottom. It's like, that's brilliant.
So somebody says, look at the recipe. You pick up the box, you flip it all over.
All the peaches fall
Peaches go everywhere. They're all bruised and rotten. But you got that recipe now exactly. that you can use those bruised and mangled peaches because you're not going to eat them.
Yeah.
Oh, marketing genius.
I know.
He's a genius, that man. Oh, yes, 'tis the season mm-hmm. to be jolly and all that.
Most of my snow's gone. Yours
yes.
is too.
Yes.
I was excited because we haven't had a snowy Christmas in quite a really while. Long time.
Yeah. Yeah. And even still, what's there that I wouldn't even consider
no.
snow?
Yeah.
It's leftover slush. That's all it is. Well, I thought it was raining when we had snow the other day.
It rained
this
morning
in
Bowmanville.
Everything was melting already off the trees, and that was the sound that you were hearing.
Oh, okay,
was it melting off the trees into the little bit of snow that was there and then was gone by the time I came home? Good times, good times. But you know what this time of year is good for?
What's that?
Trip planning.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because, you know, the majority of people aren't on the water around here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
As we refer to it in the northern hemispheres, hard water season. Mm-hmm. It's here.
People, or cabin fever season.
Cabin fever season. People like to grab maps, books, and head to the internet and plan trips for the next summer, which I do a fair amount of because, you know, Google Maps is your friend. Back in September, way back, go back a few months.
Use the Wayback Machine.
Kevin Callan wrote an article for Paddling Magazine entitled, Adventure is Being Planned Out of Existence. I'm a planner, but this sort of, that's what, why it caught my eye. He asks the question, if we are taking the wild out of wilderness by competing to book campsites 5 months in advance and previewing tent pads online. So when you go through it, it's more than, not necessarily planning your adventures, it's reserving everything. And making sure everything is just right, leaving nothing to chance. So the article, he says, I was driving home from a presentation in Northern Town when it became obvious my long drive wasn't going as planned. Construction delays, traffic jams, and I was getting very sleepy. So I chose to check into a cheap roadside motel for the night. It was the safe thing to do. I had no reservations. I just pulled into the first rundown motel I came to. And that's how horror movies start, by the way.
Yes.
It felt spontaneous, like a John Wayne Western, riding all day and sleeping wherever the wilds of the Rio Grande allowed. Small, unplanned act filled me with a sense of freedom. That is until I saw the no vacancy sign. Even the open road, the last bastion of freedom, now demands a reservation. Gone are the days where you could set off on a whim. I soldiered on by turning up the music, rolling down the car window a crack. Sometime between Tom Petty's Running Down a Dream and Gordon Lightfoot's Carefree Highway, a bulky moose blocked the roadway. Swerved into the ditch, narrowly missing the moose, I ended up sleeping in my car.
Enough of this. I'm going to take a nap.
Groggy the next morning, my road trip disaster got me thinking about how reservation systems are creeping in everywhere, shaping how we travel and adventure. Case in point, the French River Provincial Park, a backcountry area he's paddled for decades. In November, Ontario Parks announced the park would move to a site-specific reservation model for all backcountry paddling campsites. Instead of reserving a maximum of 2 weeks in advance on large in large zones and not being sure exactly where you would sleep, paddlers can now book specific campsites up to 5 months in advance, complete with photos. Nothing says wilderness adventure like previewing your tent pad on a smartphone.
True.
Yeah, the whole reservation thing is becoming a bit of a...
Well, I think because, and again, since COVID, a lot of stuff like this have changed.
Yeah.
It, like, the backcountry and camping has never been more popular. Like, there was it was popular in the 60s and 70s, and then went into a lull in the 90s and early 2000s. And
now it's back with vengeance.
And yeah, it's like it has come back with a vengeance. And there's more people out there. And so what? What is it? Ontario Parks is... what is it, 32 million, they're driving into the parks or something with the all new sites, adding a lot of electrical sites. There's a higher demand for serviced sites in campgrounds now.
Yeah.
It's just the way that things have gone. So with this popularity, they're seeing an issue in backcountry and people trying to race to get the campsite they wanted or finding everything busy. And like, we're speaking of French River here. I have been avoiding French River because I've heard that it's very busy.
Yeah.
And so I just been avoiding it. I just, like, I don't want to get the frustration of getting in there with family. And it's like, okay, well, let's go on to the next one. Next thing you know, it's 8 o'clock at night. And
yeah, we were there a few years back. Mackenzie and I went in and we got a site. We went in really early because I just want to, you know, make the most of the day sort of thing. And we got a really good site. Found out later it was a very popular site that we took.
Yeah.
And the amount of people that paddled up to the site, saw us there, and
gave
then kept
the
on
stink
going.
Eye
and every all day long. It was annoying. As
everybody,
you know,
wanted
what.
That site.
Everybody wanted the site. And it was like they'd all come just offshore. Like, you can see my boats there and everything. Yeah. Like, you don't need to come that close.
They wanted to see the face of the guy. Well,
the guy that
the
denied
site.
Them, yes.
I curse thee.
I sat there in my lawn chair, and every time somebody came by, give him the stink eye, I just flipped them the bird. Threw things at him.
That's like the preacher's point in Temagami. I've always wanted to stay on that site, but I've never seen it available when I've been wanting to stay on it. I've passed through on day trips and stuff. And it's like, oh, it's available. So you walk and check it out. But it's never been available. So it's a very popular site.
And it happens. Site-specific reservations aren't new. Many busy backcountry parks use them. For northern parks with fewer visitors, like Quetico, you can still roam freely, stopping wherever you please, just like it's always been. I prefer that.
I do, too.
I am not a site-specific campsite fan.
No, exactly. It's like that's one of my favorite things.
It takes the spontaneity out of it.
It does. And one of my favorite things is to just stop and look at campsites. And and so if you get in early enough and you're if you leave site at like 8 or 9 a.m., you can, it's like, well, I only plan on being on the water for 4 or 5 hours. And so about 2 in the afternoon, maybe, it's like, hey, let's start touring sites and see what we like. Hey, this is a nice one. Or, oh, the one we were just on, somebody's got toilet paper flowers everywhere, and it's like it stinks. Somebody left garbage in the garbage fire pits.
Or you got two tents and there's only enough room for one tent.
Exactly. There's that
problem.
Then
what do you do, right?
So, yeah, it is nice to roam and see what's the best, and maybe next time it's like, oh, I'm going to come back to this one next time type thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like I say, I'm not a big fan of – I like the way where it's like, okay, well, this is the lake you're going to stay on.
Yes.
Then you've got your choice of 7 sites on that lake.
Exactly.
I still will prefer that to the day I'm dead. Change comes because French River is getting busy. User satisfaction was dropping as paddlers spent hours searching for or racing to open campsites.
There's a guy across the lake, paddle faster. Yeah. He's going for our campsite.
For many, site-specific reservations seemed necessary. Policy change might reduce campsite conflicts, give more campers peace of mind, and help park officials crack down on litter and unsafe campfires. I have recently read social media thing that they had, whatever park they were at, they had a site specific, and somebody took their site and refused to move, even though that is our site. Here's our permit that says this site number.
I move and it anyways. A bit of a, I guess we're sharing site tonight.
I guess so.
Hmm.
While these changes aim to improve, they fundamentally shift the wilderness experience into something less wild. And that's the big thing right there.
Yes.
Is, are you going out there to, like, I mean, if you're just, if everything's all pre-planned and like that, you might as well just go to a drive-in campsite.
Exactly. Go to Mute Lake.
Right? So, you're not really experiencing the wild like that. They erase the joy of adapting to conditions and roaming. Worse, they increase the risk of paddlers pushing themselves too far, battling wind and waves to reach a reserved site. On the French, the risk is real. Its lower reaches empty into Georgian Bay's ocean-like waters. If you've ever been camping on the open rock at Georgian Bay, that wind sometimes can come up huge.
It could, yeah. And then, that could be, I don't know that I, depending on the season, if you look ahead, weather ahead, it's like, oh, avoid those.
Yeah. This isn't just French River problem. Across North America, parks are changing regulations and reservation policies to manage growing tourism. U.S. national parks like Arches, Glacier, Rocky Mountain, and others have implemented timed entry and day-use reservation systems. Algonquin Park has done the day-use reservation system.
Yes.
To limit the amount of people that can come in and use the trails and everything each day.
And so, just sidebar on that is... We almost always buy the yearly parks, Ontario Parks Pass.
Yeah.
Even with the yearly pass that you pay ahead, like whatever it is, $120. So you can just enter any park. This is your pass to enter. But with a lot of parks, you still have to, like Algonquin Park, you still have to reserve that you're going to be there that day.
At that time.
And it's like, but I already have the pass. It's like, no, we have timed entries. We can't afford to have the crush of population.
Yeah.
And
yeah, if 1,000 people want to walk that trail today.
Yeah, everybody's out. Yeah. Yeah. So it kind of, it does make sense. If there's that many more feet on the trails, then I accept it. I get it. I understand it. I may have paid for my yearly pass, but I have to follow the system. And
I think there's a big difference between the front country and the back country when it comes to this sort of thing, though.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes.
Because front country, everybody can get to.
It's jammed.
Yeah. It's absolutely jammed. Yeah. I remember being out in the Rockies and Johnson Canyon. We went to see that. And both sides of the road had cars parked up and down for a good kilometer or more. And so if you're parking there, then you got to walk a kilometer. Then you got to walk through the jam-packed parking lot and then down the trails with just wall-to-wall people.
Mm-hmm.
So something like that, I fully agree with the, you know, timed entries and stuff like that, to keep the still, I mean, all of a sudden you get all these cars parked up and down. How long till somebody steps out and gets hit?
Oh, yeah.
Like that. Accidents are going to happen.
So he pulls out in the car.
Yeah.
And we had, when we did Cape Breton last summer, and so we talked at one of the, we were at the visitor center, we said, oh yeah, this is what our plan is, and they said, well, you know, if you do the Skyline Trail, make sure you get there really early, because at about 8:30 in the morning, the parking lot's full, and the rangers will turn people away. It's like, ooh.
Yep.
So it's like one of those things, it's like, okay, everybody, it's 6 a.m., get up, like we have to go early if we want to park, so... We got there early enough that Skyline Trail Park Lot was only a quarter full, but by the time we got back and we left, it was packed.
Yeah, and like I say, I think you got to draw a difference, a line between front country and back country when it comes
absolutely
to this sort of thing.
100%.
While reservations may improve user experiences when compared to the alternative, they also alter what it feels like to explore landscape. In retrospect, I should have planned my road trip better and booked a motel before setting out. These days, it's foolish to travel without reservations. And see, I would never think about booking a hotel.
Or motel.
And then, you know, I didn't expect all that traffic. I didn't expect all the, you know, extra stuff that held me up and kept me, you know, a lot longer than it should have taken me to get home, where I'm starting to get extra tired. Like, I wouldn't have reserved one.
Yeah.
And I would have been in the same boat.
Back in the day, I would just pull over into a rest stop and sleep in the car.
Yeah.
But I can't do that with kids, right? I could force them into it, but it's like, no, whatever, the day took long, we need a hotel, yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, it depends on situation and who you have with you, right?
These days, it's foolish to travel without reservations. Maybe the same is true for wilderness tripping. The go where the wind takes you mentality has faded, a relic of the past, like John Wayne and his horse. Site-specific reservations cater to a world that craves convenience and certainty. And for me, that says a lot right there. That was the whole purpose of going out into the backcountry. Exploring.
Discovering.
And like he says, if you can just look at your phone, yeah, that looks like a good site. I'll book that one.
Yeah.
They strip away a central tenet of backcountry, embracing the unknown.
Yes.
By trading unpredictability for security, we risk turning wilderness camping into another curated experience, a glossy brochure of what adventure used to be. The days of pulling over at a motel or pitching a tent wherever the river takes you are slipping away. Trips are being booked months in advance, leaving spontaneity and the spirit of adventure sleeping in the ditch. I made my buddy when we were in college way, way, way back. I was reminded this week. We rode motorcycles, and one day we had class in the morning, and I said, let's go visit my parents for dinner in Ottawa. So we did the 5-hour drive on our bikes, the scenic route, went to my parents' house, and we're here for dinner, and my mom's looking like, what are you doing? Practicing spontaneity. And to this day, the two of us say, I'm just practicing spontaneity, right? That's the thing between my mom and I yeah. now. But that was it. And then, yeah, have dinner, chit-chat with them for a bit, and then head back home on the bikes, get home after midnight, and then up early the next morning for class, yeah. you know. But the spontaneity issue, the whole discovering, exploration, and like I said, you get to a spot that the only site left maybe only holds one tent. You got two tents. Well, you guys got to figure that out. Yes. That's part of it.
Yep.
Right? What happens if your campfire doesn't go? You got to learn how to figure something out. And that's what the whole... But by doing everything is reserved, everything is this, everything is that, you're losing.
Yeah.
You're losing it.
We did Gaspé Peninsula, what, 2 or 3 years ago? Anyways, one of the final days after like Forleon and whatever, we did one too many hikes. We did one too many touristy things, and it's like, okay, well, you know, we'll start looking for hotels, motels, whatever. Anyways, so right before we crossed over from Quebec into New Brunswick, it's like, we need to find a place. So we pulled into a couple hotels and motels. It's like full, full, full. And then I can't remember what the name of the hotel was, but we stopped and we said, what do you got? And they said, sorry, we have no rooms.
Oh.
Where can we go? It's getting late. It's going to be dark in about half an hour. We need a hotel or something. We need to eat. We need supper, yada, yada, yada. And it was, well, sometimes people occasionally camp in our back parking lot. It's like, what? And they said, no, no, really, they do. It's like you park in the parking lot and just pitch your tent on the lawn. And we were camping. It was a camping trip.
Right.
And it's like, okay, so we weren't the only ones. So there's a couple people with camper trailers, and we were there, and we were the only ones in a tent.
Right.
And so
boondocking, right?
Yeah, yeah. So we were back there. We were like 10 feet from the car on their lawn next to the tennis court in Gaspé in Quebec. It's like, well, it worked.
Right.
And we still had to pay.
Yeah.
Which we got the continental breakfast or whatever in the morning because of it. So they said, yeah, oh, it'll include breakfast. It's like, oh, this is so strange.
experience.
This is so weird.
Yeah. Well, I like to plan. I mean, when it comes to trips.
Yes.
I like Mr. to do all Dossier. My plans. They call me Dossier for a reason. I check my routes, how far I hope to go each day. I check the areas I'm planning to camp so I can, you know, maybe I can camp near a waterfall or on a beach or away from that swamp filled with mosquitoes.
Yeah.
When I make my plans for a trip, though, they tend to be a guideline because sometimes things happen. Weather, 14 beaver dams on a river instead of 2.
Yes, yes.
You know.
You can't plan for that.
No. When I went on the Moose River with Scott Robinson there, he was kind of wary because I had my plan for
yeah.
the next week and a half sort of thing. And day one, everything went
sideways.
And he just looks at me worried and I go, well, well. He's like, you're kidding. I go, no. He says, you put all that time into the plan. Yeah, it's just a guideline though.
Yes.
Like if you yeah. can't veer from that guy, if your trip is dead because you didn't get the site yeah. you wanted or it took you a bit longer or something you can't reserve or
yeah.
plan for, if that's what it takes to ruin it for you, then you don't need to be out there.
Yes, correct. So how, for campsites on the river, you didn't, there's no set campsites.
Nope.
Did you
nope.
just find
we had guidelines, and stuff? Reading old trip guides and stuff and, yeah. and trip reports. I knew, okay, well here, somewhere on this island, you should be able to camp. Here, they're supposed to be, they camped.
Oh, okay.
Another group camped here. Another, you know, one guy camped there sort of deal. So I knew, okay, you know what? On my map, I marked potential campsite.
Yeah.
So when we knew we'd get near the end of the day or whatever, we're ready to call it a day, we'd look at these different spots and, you know what, that one looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
That'll fit us. And that was our campsite. So there was no specific site marked that mm-hmm. that was our site for the day. Or,
did you ever stay on a gravel bar or a sandbar or anything?
No.
Always off the river?
It was off
the trees?
No. No, right on the river at point. Yeah. We were sticking, when we got closer, because tides start to affect it,
yeah.
We were putting a stick in,
yeah.
And one time it came up probably about a foot up from where the stick was at night.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably about 8 feet from where we were actually camped.
Oh, okay.
Because then all of a sudden there was like a 10-foot cliff, and then like you couldn't camp in what was beyond
yeah,
that.
Exactly, yeah.
So, but that was what it's all about, right?
Who was it that we... Was it Frank Wolf? Somebody was down in South America camping and the tide came in, or maybe it was West Coast. And,
well, that's how a few
and they
people,
started
yeah.
floating and, yeah. the, and the tide came in and they were like, oh no.
Yeah, it's not good. But all that being said, I do have to agree with Kevin. Having to reserve every little thing can put a damper on the whole experience.
It can. It's overly planned. Yeah. And then you're really set to a timeline. It's like, yeah. Well, you know, it's what I could get. It's only an hour and a half between campsites. So let's do donuts in the middle of these lakes or whatever. Or it's like, we're going to have to paddle 10 hours today to get to
right?
the next campsite.
And there's a thunder lightning storm.
Exactly. We can't have delays. Yeah.
It's just one lake, a river, a long river, winding river. We can take our time and then another lake and we're there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But all of a sudden you've got 14, 15 beaver dams, which weren't shown
yeah.
on any.
Yeah.
And that takes time to haul all your stuff over those dams.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, all of a sudden your little 2 hour trip becomes 7 hours.
You're like Tim
Or River. A rock garden. And you're portaging everything
you're dragging.
For 2 kilometers.
Yeah. Oh, low water. Like Tim River is very hard to predict.
Yep.
One of the first times I did Tim River, we got on the Tim River, planned it out, got in off the portage, and it was like, well, I was expecting this to be 3 hours, not six.
Mm-hmm.
So we were in after dark on Sheldrup Lake, whatever it's called, and it was like, whoa, I did not think it was going to take this long.
Yeah. You Oof. Don't know. Mm-hmm. Especially going to new areas, right?
Yeah.
So when you're reserving sites, lakes, parking, trains, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it does take some of the adventure yeah. out of the whole thing. I think that's part of the reason why Crown Land camping has become such a big thing over the last few years. That and the fact that it's free camping, that doesn't hurt. We're having to go farther and farther away to get good camping and canoeing. And do you want to travel for 6 hours just to find out there is nothing left because you didn't reserve?
Exactly.
So yeah. you're having to go farther. Now all of a sudden your 6 hours becomes 8 hours.
Yeah.
I know Algonquin had the not reservable sites at some of the campgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, we got to be there when the thing opens just to find out there's 10 other people before you waiting for one of those three
yes.
non-reservable sites. So now you've driven 4 hours not to have a site to just drive back home.
It's like, oh no.
You know, it's taken, yeah. Maybe the question is, are there too many people going outdoors now? I mean, that's
I
the thing is getting everybody
yeah,
out there.
It's good to get people out. I don't want to say there's too many people out there.
It's a big catch 22, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Like, let's get all the people out there. Whoa, not that many.
Exactly.
Let's not go crazy.
I mean, everybody.
I mean, there's only so many spots people can go.
Yes.
Right? And when the big increased population, all of a sudden, you know, this park, it had, you know, 100,000 visitors last year. It's had 350,000 this year.
Yeah.
And it can't handle that.
People are loving it to
yeah.
death.
Yeah. Getting online for 7 in the morning to grab a spot 5 months
yeah.
down the road is getting very tiring.
I don't like the games people play when they
no,
do that.
No. Now I'll have to drive 10 hours away so I don't have to fight the fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I don't want to deal. No, I'm not going there anymore. I don't want to get up at 7 just to click, 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 click. Oh, I didn't get the spot because mm-hmm. I wasn't, you know, somebody else's internet was better.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not fighting that fight anymore. Forget it. I will drive 12 hours
mm-hmm.
to a put-in if I know I'm going to...
You get freedom.
Get where I want to be.
Exactly.
Have that freedom.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't think it's the fact that they're planning. Like, I don't think it's being... I don't know if planned is the correct word. I think reserved. Adventure is being reserved out of existence.
Yes.
Yep. Because, yeah, planning, to me, in my opinion, planning is, you know, not to go against the almighty Kevin Callan. Just kidding, yeah. Kevin. Like, to me, plan, you got to plan your trip. But I don't want to have to reserve the crap out of everything just to,
I know. I
just
know.
To get there, right? So, just means now we got to go to the Yukon every weekend to go camping.
That would be nice.
Okay, and just to keep on this, I'm griping, turning into an
old fart,
shaking his fist to get the F off my
lawn. Get off my lawn, you darn kids.
I love going onto Google Maps.
Oh, yeah.
Following waterways, potential campsites, especially on northern lakes. So, you know, love that, being able to do that from my chair.
So, little side story with that.
Yep.
And so, over the years, Google Maps was getting better and better and better and better. And then suddenly, some kind of privacy thing came in, and they started downgrading their maps. So I remember looking at a lot of these northern rivers. I do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I look at rivers as like, oh, there's a sandbar, there's this, there's that trail, there's a portage. I can see it. And now it's a bit more grainy.
Yeah, it depends on where you're looking, because you can see the definite difference.
Sure, right? Sure.
Yeah. Fully
but agree. they have reduced the not accuracy, the granularity of backcountry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think they have, because I noticed they did it, especially residential. And so it's harder to really investigate a waterway, a river, looking for, you know, portages and sandbars and so on.
When I do Google Maps on my neighborhood,
yeah.
When I do the, like, come by my house,
mm-hmm.
when I'm in front of my neighbor's house, my old Ford Ranger is still in my drive. I haven't had that since 2013. Yeah. And then when I go a little bit farther, my Ranger disappears and my wife's 2008 Ford Escape appears, which we haven't had since 2017.
You can pick the years that the car went by. So if you pick up in the upper left corner on the pick other dates, other years. So there's in my old house, you can see it's like it wasn't there for long, but somehow the Google car went by right after I renovated a bathroom. So there's a toilet.
Oh, that's yard. When you need somebody on it.
it's like, oh. So right? Now for all history, the Google map is going to have my old toilet that I took out
right?
sitting in the front yard. It's like, oh, so redneck.
Forever. Well, I like using that. And even if it's just finding, you know, like the way what connects to what and different lakes and stuff like that. I love it. When I'm sitting in my chair, when I'm out in my boat, and I'm paddling, I want that paper map.
I want my map
case. I want that map that I've drawn everything on, little notes and all that sort of stuff. I've not become one of those followers of technology, the GPS, the Garmins,
handy. Those units. They do serve a purpose, but I prefer like Algonquin Canoe Routes map, Clarity Canoe Routes map.
Yep.
I prefer them because it's something that I can have in a Ziploc bag ready to go at any moment, and I don't have to worry about it running out of battery.
Right. And it's that's the same with my phone. My phone, I use it to do some quick pictures. I use it as the journaling thing because I used to bring a little pencil and paper, and well, now I just at the end of the day, quickly type out my thoughts on the day, what happened and stuff like that. Other than that, I know there's people that sit there like nonstop looking at their Garmin.
Yeah.
Saying, okay, we got to go that way now and we got to go around this island. Oh, look at this island. Let's zoom in on that island. No, I want to be able to just, and when I'm paddling, especially in wind and waves and stuff like that, I don't want to have to stop and get blown back half a kilometer because I'm starting to, oh yeah, we need to get around that island
over
there.
You got a paddle back there.
I've got my map, big map sitting here, you know, in front of me on a backpack or something, right where I can see it so I can keep paddling and I can look at this map.
Quick reference, exactly.
I love the paper map. I love the fact that I can mark it up with, write my notes on it and stuff like that. And I'm not fiddling around. I don't need two hands on my Garmin to do stuff and stuff like that. So, came across this article, biologist and avid canoeist Jim Duncan. Nothing beats the old-fashioned way of planning a multi-day wilderness outing, pulling out a large paper map, gathering his traveling companions around it, and discussing the itinerary. Mm. I still have Ontario maps in my truck.
Yeah.
I transferred it from my old truck to my new truck. just in case, right? They mark up the paper with notations. C might indicate a planned campsite, P for a spot to portage the canoe. Some lines might denote a set of rapids. There's something satisfying about spreading a map out on your lap or table and talking about the routes, says 65-year-old Duncan, who studies owls and explores waterways in Manitoba and northwestern Ontario.
Very cool.
For more than 40 years, he's relied on Canada map sales to get maps for his trips. Combination office/store run by Manitoba government offers topographic maps, which are even better because they show you all the heights of land changes and stuff like that, right? Every corner of the province, descriptive maps of rivers, depth maps of lakes for anglers, land ownership maps, and more. A lot of info on that sort of stuff. For a few extra dollars, the maps also come waterproof. The store is set to close at the end of March. Because many maps are available online, and modern technology, such as handheld satellite navigation devices, is replacing printing material. This really annoys the crap out of me that we get pushed and bullied into using new technology.
Yes.
I was, and just a case in point, I've always been against this. When everybody was switching to the big, fast Windows machines and stuff like that, I was still using Windows 3.1.1, and all of a sudden they're getting like this Windows 97 or 98 or whatever it was, and they get to the point where it says you cannot run this anymore.
Because, yeah.
And it's like, and I'm using DOS for stuff, and it's like I've got no choice but to do this now. And this to me is the same sort of thing. You've got to use the new stuff, or you can't use the old stuff because we're all moving in this direction. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you, it's not always better.
No, it's not.
And it's we talked about talking about this as a topic, and I'd rather do it as a video than a
map reading.
Yeah, the map reading, the compass. How many people do you know can actually sit down with a map and compass anymore?
It's a lost skill.
It like, really is.
When I was in the military, we did a lot of map reading, and I experienced a lot of that. Like, you know, if you're 1,000 meters away from two radio towers, you can measure the distance between the two radio towers by the little digits on your compass and so on. Right? There's all these things, or just taking a transit from two points, two mountaintops, and drawing it out on your map, you know exactly where you are
right
by transiting those lines to those two points. It's one of those skills that are being lost. And I don't know, like, I've been thinking about us discussing this topic on the podcast is like, you know, hey, it's winter. If, you know, instead of getting to the doldrums and just between outdoor shows and stuff, like, there's lots of courses. There's a few courses online you'd have to pay for to learn map reading skills, but there's also a lot of free ones through the government.
Right.
So it's one of those skills that I think everybody should have. Yeah. You don't never know when zombie apocalypse is going to happen.
Well, and just sort of aside to that, my old compass.
Yeah,
had the round compass part. Plus, it was a plastic thing that had different marks and stuff for different measurements and that. And it had a little magnifying glass in the middle. So if you could look at your map better.
Yep.
That magnifying glass also started fires.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So if you're out there and you're lost or something like that, I could just start a little campfire with that magnifying glass in the sun.
Yeah.
But it's really becoming, like I say, newer isn't always better. And I deal with a guy at work every day who looks at the latest and greatest technologies and wants to update everything constantly. And it's like, you just want to spend the company money is all you want to do. And it gets tiring listening. Oh, this is the best thing since sliced. No, it's not the best thing since sliced bread. It's the newest thing since sliced bread.
It's just the newest thing. And it can fail so easily.
It really, yeah. I'm getting tired of it. So they're setting it to close because of modern technology such as handheld satellite navigation devices and is replacing printed material. Mass majority of people getting it online anyways. So we're looking just to facilitate the process along, as opposed to kind of the old school method of getting these printed maps, says the Manitoba Environment Minister, Mike Moyes. Digital Manitoba will continue to be available through a variety of existing sources, such as Natural Resources Canada, private companies, and for fishing purposes, angling maps at the Provincial Natural Resources Department. Certain suppliers also offer printed maps that can be sent by mail. Some sold at the government store are already provided by companies that also sell direct to the public. But for some nature lovers, the ability to have one-stop shopping for a variety of printed maps will be missed. I think Ottawa had the map store as well.
There was.
And
I remember
buy everything.
I remember ordering topographical maps from. Yeah.
And I mean, unless you got a big printer, buying these things online or downloading these maps online and then having to print them out.
Yes.
If you want anything with a good view, you're printing out like big and then having to tape them together. And
I remember it was early 2000s. I was ordering maps online and going into Gagnon Sports in Oshawa, looking at topographical maps, and it's like, oh, paper copy. It's like, oh, I could spend three times the amount to get a waterproof one. So if that was the, I remember back then, it's like, oh, you can get it waterproof.
Right.
And so I never did buy the waterproof ones because it's like, oh, that's real. I didn't have much money then. And it's like, oh, you know, I'll just buy another one next year. And so it's those maps, those are priceless to have something like that. And especially waterproof, if you're in a downpour or out in the middle of nowhere, you need to know what the top topography is like. And I don't know, it's nice to have the paper or laminated. Back in the day, I used to laminate maps.
Yeah.
I got
a laminator at work.
I used to laminate my own maps to pre-mark them up on the hiking route that we're going to take through the mountains and laminate them. And then I had a grease pencil that was in the tube with the map, and it hooked off my belt. And you just mark on the laminated map where we are, where we want to go, the ridge line, yada, yada, yada.
Any weird things you find?
Exactly.
Yeah. So Duncan says he uses digital technology when he's on trips. Handheld satellite devices are great for determining an exact location, but electronic equipment can experience glitches and batteries run out. Marguerite Roger has for years ventured out into the wilderness to explore rivers and lakes, armed with a canoe, compass, supplies, and printed maps from the government store. The maps are actually critical for safety, for 100%. Starters.
Yep.
100%. They show you different features that then end up being part of where you can plan your route or where you have to be careful with things. Because I got an old Garmin down in this big pile of crap down there, you can see. My brother gave it to me because he had no use for it. He got it for free or something like that. And it was cool to use.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, yeah, look at that, look at that. But it did not show you everything the map does.
Nope.
Not even close. I'm sure, you know, with technology, they're better now, but, you know, still.
The first Garmin I had, I can't believe I remember it. It was a Garmin eTrex. There was no mapping. It gave you coordinates on the screen, which you then had to take from the Garmin and mark them on your paper map to see where you were.
Right.
So you'd like, you know, the lat long and the minutes and the seconds. And it's like, oh, here's where we are. Right. And then you go on the topo map and say, okay, we got to go follow this ridge and climb over that and yada, yada, yada. So that was the first one I ever had. That was a long time ago.
You're old.
That was like 1996, 98.
That was way back in the 1900s. I can remember.
98. I think it was 98. That was a long time ago.
Printed maps offer bigger picture of your trip than digital ones. Being able to mark up printed copies with notes is important as the information can be shared with other paddlers. There's been times where I've pulled up my canoe against somebody else's canoe, and we've each pulled out our maps and said, do you know about any camping spots in this particular lake, or how is this particular portage, she says. That just happens, that doesn't happen that same way with digital maps. You can fold it open and see where you're going or take a look at where the next day is going to take you. Colin Kyle, a scout leader and president of Paddle Manitoba, said the government store has produced customized maps tailored to exact areas of his planned trips. Exactly what I'm saying is you get that, download that map, and you've got to then copy, paste, blow up, all that sort of stuff, right? And not everybody has, you know, top-notch printers either. I could merge three or four maps together, he said, adding such a service may be harder to find or more expensive at other vendors. Moy says closing the store means four positions involving a cost about $570,000 will be redeployed to other government areas. Huh. Province plans to provide a list of alternative vendors on its website. If there's any Manitobans that have concerns about how to access these different maps or other resources, we're more than happy to help them navigate that as we kind of shift our mode of information.
It might be good, and it kind of makes me think about it too, is like, maybe I should, like, of some typical areas that I go to, I buy some paper maps. Maps don't change. If you have a topographical map, that's pretty stable. Like,
well, unless you're the Mississippi River, but
well, true. The only thing you really have to adjust to every year is the magnetic declination. Mm-hmm. Like in any given year, because the magnetic North Pole does move every year, and so it does transit. And
but maybe it's just all of us getting older too. Like. I still have records. I still have cassettes. I have CDs. I want that physical piece of music in my hand.
Yes.
If I'm buying somebody's album, I want that album. I don't just want the files mm-hmm. on a computer somewhere or my phone. Yep. I want that album in my hot little mm-hmm. hands. And the same with this. I don't want to just look at some little screen. I want to be able to look at, well, here's where we are. Oh, well, let's you know, at the end of the day and you're around the campfire, well, look at way over here. This is way over here. And you're talking about something. You got the whole Algonquin tripping map in yep. front of you.
Yeah.
And you're saying, oh, no, I was way over here on in the Barren Canyon. You're talking yep. way over here on Bice Lake. Total yeah. opposite. And if you're on your garment, you're fidgeting and you're fooling around trying to scroll and all. Whereas you got this map. You're there. 2 points. 2 seconds.
It's so easy to see so and easy understand it. Yeah.
Damn, I'm getting crotchety.
Well, you know what? Our skills are going to come in handy when there's a gigantic solar flare and
right?
we lose all power. And
I'm keeping a list of all the people I know that are so big into the technology stuff. And when they come crying to me because I know how to use a compass.
Show me how to use a compass.
I'm turning my back and walking away. I'm letting the bears get them. You are dead to me. Yeah, Mr. Garmin, Mr. GPS. Not that I have anything against Garmin's, just the popular brand. Get off my lawn. Check my maps.
Yeah.
If you knew how to read a map, you'd know where my lawn was. Use your compass and navigate your way off. Oh, you can't use a compass, you say. You want to buy a house?
What? No.
What? No?
Where did that come from?
What? No?
I have a house.
Paddling northern Minnesota's Vermilion River is one way to make the scenic journey to Crane Lake. Picturesque gateway to both Voyageurs National Park and Boundary Waters Canoe Area. Sounds cool. A secluded log estate on the Vermilion River has been listed for $1.5 million U.S., which is about $800,000 billion Canadian, is ideal for accessing the region's wildest woods. With a boat launch and nearly 560 feet of shoreline
wow.
beckoning each adventure. Most of the river is wild with very little development, excellent fishing, lots of wildlife, and navigable in a motorboat or canoe to Lake Vermilion, Crane Lake, portaging around the rapids, the listing says. 9.65-acre estate
that's a lot.
Features a 2,667-square-foot main home.
Wow.
A year-round guest home above a six-stall detached garage and two guest cabins.
This is sounding amazing.
The spacious main home, built in 2010, is a handcrafted three-bedroom, three-bathroom log lodge with two-story great room complete with a massive fireplace. The main floor primary suite features a hot tub, and river views can be enjoyed from the screened-in porch and deck. State is surrounded by Old Growth Pine Forest, which adjoins Superior National Forest.
Oh.
You want to buy a house?
Huh.
Ah, it's so not a no.
That gives you access to, well, I can't afford it, but it gives you access to Superior National Forest, the Boundary Waters.
It's right there. Voyageurs is right there.
Shoreline. Is it on a river or on a lake? What did it
sounds like it's a lake.
Huh.
Right? Vermilion River.
It's a bit of a commute, though.
Dude, if you can afford $1.5 million U.S., you would not be commuting.
True.
Do you know anything about GoFundMe pages? Asking for a friend.
Yes, I know.
Huh. Well, you know what? If you got this guest cabin or two guest cabins and a guest home, you could have a bunch of people come up. All your friends would constantly be there.
Exactly.
Yep. Right?
And charge them all $1,000 a night.
To make a teeny tiny dent in your $1.5 million.
I know.
Right? If you're interested, 7236 Far North Road, Bike, Minnesota. Spelt B-U-Y-C-K, pronounced bike, apparently. Check it out. I mean, it's a pretty cool looking thing. But, I mean, it could be a rundown shack. But if it was there, and you could live there. It's the price that gets me. You're Googling it.
I'm Googling it. That's why I'm kind of quiet right now.
I guess you missed that one.
North
Road. Bike, Minnesota. Could you imagine, though, living there all summer and having access to all that paddling?
It's on Zillow.
That would be astounding.
Oh, look at that.
That's what I'm saying. I think that's what I said. What a nice place.
Oh, look at the stone fireplace. That's amazing. It's huge. It's like
3 bathrooms. That's 1 bathroom from every 2 days. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday. At least Sunday. Sundays you get to pee out in the woods.
There you go. 3 bed, 2 bath, 2,700 square feet. Huh.
9.65 acre estate.
What's the taxes?
That's what your friends are for. That'd be cool. I just Googling stuff and I found this. And I'm just like, really? And the Boundary Waters home? It's like, ooh.
Oh, it's right next to a campsite. Really close to a campsite.
See? Better not be on my lawn.
Is that a river or a lake? It's a very long lake.
Or is it a very wide river? It's called Vermilion River.
It's definitely in the state side of everything.
Yes. Which is why I'm saying it's like $850 billion Canadian.
Huh. Yeah, I mean.
Plus taxes. So if anybody wants to donate to our GoFundMe page.
So it's south of Voyageurs National Park, east of Kuching State Forest.
And it adjoins the Superior National Forest.
How do you say that? Kebotogama State Forest. It's in that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of old growth and everything around the sounds of it.
Northwest of
Superior. So if anybody has 1.5 and wants to buy this house, we'd be more than happy to come up and go on a canoe trip with you.
Yeah, type in the address and go to Zillow. And it's
7236 Far North Road, Bike, Minnesota. B-U-Y-C-K, bike.
It's only 15 years old. Who builds this and it moves away right away?
I don't know. Not me.
Hmm.
Maybe they discovered all the mistakes and are building another one. Anywho.
Island. There's an island in the kitchen.
Right.
Very modern furnishings.
Right.
Big bedrooms. Office. All log. A lot of woodwork. Look at that. Stone shower, walk-in shower. Huge.
Good times. Good times.
Yeah, this is amazing.
Speaking of nothing in particular, canoe clubs.
Yes.
Getting started with canoe clubs. Or, more to the point, starting canoe clubs. They've all got to start somewhere. Somebody along the line goes, you know what would be good for here? Is a canoe club.
Okay.
So looking back at it, you know, I mean, 20 years from now, people go, oh, yeah, the one day he decided. So when he's not serving and protecting local residents, Madison Sinnett enjoys nothing more than jumping into his kayak to blow off steam, stay fit, and take in the natural beauty of Penticton and the Okanagan Valley. Sinnett, a member of the Penticton RCMP, is hoping to share his passion for paddling by organizing a Penticton-based kayak and canoe club in 2026. So somewhere along the line, somebody has to go, you know what? You know what would really be cool that a lot of people could benefit from?
Mm-hmm.
Kayak canoe club.
Yeah.
And like I say, 20 years down the road, somebody will go, hey, that Madison fella was onto something, apparently.
Yes. But Penticton, I would think they'd already have one.
Well, they don't have one of those.
Okay.
However, our buddy Mike Nichols, mm-hmm. who lives
yes.
in that area, he says he's going to reach out and check on progress. Mike says our Dragon Boat and Outrigger Club is currently in negotiations with the city to help build a new boathouse. I wonder if they'll point him in our direction to consolidate operations. Because one of the things he's looking for is
space for equipment and gear.
Space for equipment, gear, and all that sort of stuff. Yep. And he's hoping to get a grant and some money and
hangout location
and whatnot.
Yeah.
So he's originally from Saskatoon, spent much of his life there, and developed a deep passion for kayaking, one that nearly carried him to the Olympic level.
Wow.
Came close to qualifying for the Games and competed nationally and internationally. 2016, he became moved to BC and accepted a position with the RCMP detachment in Oliver, which is where Michael's from. Then he's been in with the Penticton RCMP for the past few years. And like many who relocate to the Okanagan for work, he says he feels fortunate to live here and wants to give back by sharing his favorite pastime with the community. So I'm putting my heart and soul into this because I'm passionate about it. Started with the Saskatoon Racing Canoe Club when I was 13, loved it right away, paddled there until I was 22. When he decided to become a police officer, he set aside his Olympic aspirations but never stepped away from the sport. I've used my training to maintain my fitness and I just love it, he says. Now that I have 3 kids here in Penticton, I'm looking for a way to get them involved as well. Given the popularity of dragon boat racing and other water sports in Penticton, Sinnett said he was surprised the city doesn't already have an organized kayak and canoe club. Always thought about starting a club here, and I was shocked there wasn't one for kayaking, canoeing, or even rowing. I knew about the success of the Dragon Boat and Outrigger Club, but that's a completely separate discipline.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, kayaking and canoeing,
you don't have
10 people in the boat with you.
Fewer people.
And if there are 10 people in your boat. Yeah. His goal is to establish a canoe and kayak club in Penticton as soon as possible. He's going to present his proposal to Penticton City Councilor on January 20th, outlining his plan to launch the club. He's going to be asking council to consider some type of lease agreement to provide land use for the club. He says, right now I don't have a location. I'm looking for permission to use a piece of land and to get things started. Hence why Mike says, I wonder if they'll point him in our direction.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be
combined efforts.
Yeah. Dragon boat, outrigger, canoe, and kayak club.
Yeah.
Right? And that way all the money can go into
you can
that boat
consolidate.
House
there's,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. All that sort of stuff.
Which is why
right?
there's always mergers with big companies and their yeah. combined efforts and reduce costs and so on.
To begin, I'm hoping council will be able to be open with to something temporary to get the club up and running. Long-term plan would be build a formal boathouse with washrooms, change rooms. Initially, we may have to use sea containers. I'm still working on those details. Also, finalize a GoFundMe page to help raise startup funds. So, I got the city in. I know the city is consulting on what to do with that Esplanade area, but ideally that would be a great spot. Uh-huh. So he's picking out spots already.
Yes.
Plans to offer on-water training planning programs for all ages, youth summer camps, competitive programs from youth through seniors, boat storage for recreational paddlers, which is always a plus. We'll need storage for non-motorized watercraft. I'd like to offer programs for adults and masters athletes. I want this to be a club for everyone. also plans to meet with the Penticton Indian Band leadership and the local school board to explore programs for band members and school-aged children. Interesting. Once the club is established and regular training sessions are in place, he hopes to organize regattas for athletes interested in competing against other clubs across the region. So, yeah, I mean, this is, he's taking this, like...
He's taking it seriously. He's, like...
Totally seriously, yeah. And this is what we want to do. So I wonder if he maybe does, because the Dragon Boat and Outriggers have their thing going, and he wants this to become big and just centralized and not have those other two sports take away from what he wants to do.
Yes.
That's what it sounds like. I have a lot of support from Canoe Kayak BC, which has provided a letter of recommendation, he says. Strong paddling community across the region, the province, and many clubs have already expressed interest in donating equipment to help us get started. That's a bonus. Once approved and location is finalized, he believes the club could begin operations quickly. We can get people in boats fairly fast. My hope is to have paddlers on the water by spring.
Really?
That's pretty fast.
That's aggressive. It's well, you know what? He looks like he's done the footwork. He's done the planning. He does have community connections within the paddling and racing community.
Right.
So he's built these community connections over his lifetime of racing and different clubs that he's been a part of. So it makes sense. He's the right person to be building these connections and improving on them and building a new club because he's got the experience. He knows the people.
Penticton was once home to the Penticton Aquatic Club, and Synod has tentatively applied to use the name Skaha Aquatic Club. I want Aquatic Club in the name because it represents a wide range of water-based activities. While the focus will be canoe and kayak, we also like to offer lake swimming lessons out of the boathouse. It would bring kids from across the community. For those who excel, a long-term goal is to provide pathways to compete at the regional, provincial, and national levels. So if you want some more information, if you're in the area, he can be contacted at Skaha Aquatic Club, all one word, at gmail.com.
He's already nailed down the name. Proteus has the same website and everything.
Yep. So yeah, you can find out more information. And like I say, Mike is going to check into that and see what the dealio is too. But if you're asking for money from local governments and stuff, and there's already a canoe club, like Mike says, I wouldn't be surprised if they say, listen, why don't you just merge with these fellas? Cause we're looking at maybe giving them money for new boathouse, and then we give them a little bit more. They can accommodate you guys as well in this new aquatic club.
And you know what, he's good for him doing what he's doing, but it does make sense to combine efforts of an existing club, because then you can share a footprint, share resources, yada yada yada.
Yeah. And like I say, which is the whole point of this, at some point somebody's got to start something. And it's nice to, you know, right at the beginning say, hey, like, this dude's now stepped up and said,
yeah.
So there's still people out there these days saying, hey, you know what we need? We need a new paddling club, or we need a new group to do this, that, and the other thing. And it's real. It's not just something on a Facebook group or something like that, right? It's an actual boots on the ground sort of thing, business, real walls, brick and mortar, as you say, sort of thing. And hopefully for him it takes off, and whether it's in conjunction with the Dragon Boat and Outriggers, or totally on it on their own. Hopefully it takes off. And like I say, in 20 years, remember the day that guy, right?
Yeah.
It's nice to see people are still out there trying to keep things going, even in these days and times.
Absolutely.
It's tough out there.
Yeah. And you're building your own community.
Yes.
So you're building your own community that you're interested in. You're just going to get like-minded people doing the same thing you do that you want to do. So it totally makes sense. And
it does.
I can see it's going to draw people in, but he's got the interest. So he's building his own community around himself. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So good luck to him. Hopefully it works out. And then if you go do... a little circuit with said
Byron Lakes Loop.
Yeah.
Yep.
Then maybe you stop in and see what's happening with this canoe kayak club.
I keep meaning to Google and find flights, but there's so many people say, oh, careful, make sure you already know what you want, because if they, you, as soon as you start dropping those interests into the algorithm, the prices start jumping up. Google sees what you're doing, and other, and airline companies see what you're doing. So I need to say, yes, this is the date.
Go to Trivago.
Yeah.
Make sure you have your teeth done first.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That guy that's on those commercials.
Yeah.
Can't stand that commercials. Yeah. But yeah, maybe you can drop in and see how that canoe kayak club's doing there in Penticton.
Mm-hmm.
Dun, dun, dun. See, that's just more. 100%.
Yep.
Just more. Oh, I've got to go out there to BC to do some research for the show.
Keep a few days free on the front and back end and
see.
Do a touring around and
see.
There you go.
All right. I'm there for you, buddy. that's all I got this week. You got anything else?
I do not. I'm still looking at photos of this
house. Well, apparently nobody's getting anywhere Christmas now, because you're going to be saying that. All right. Well, again, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to everybody.
Yes.
It is Christmas Day when you're listening to this, and thanks for listening.
Or 6 months down the road.
Or 6 months down the road. Yeah. Hope you got what you wanted for Christmas. Socks. Socks and a tie. That's all I got. Alrighty, well, if you want to find more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.